talking about demons. What are the demons?
Voices.
Tell me about them. What are the voices about?
It's another voice, the evil side.
Yeah, whatever your name is, Satan.
Welcome, folks, to Evil Examined. Yeah, and for today, we have the extra evil episode for you guys, just in time for Halloween. So get ready. This one's going to be a wild one.
My favorite, dude, Halloween.
I know. It's the best one, dude. The best commercial holiday of all.
Yeah. I have no qualms about spending hundreds of dollars on stupid shit that gets destroyed really easily.
Yeah. That you're going to use once a year.
Right.
Or if you're a serial killer, you can use multiple times a year.
I tend to let the stuff linger a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you have it all like in my house, it just hangs. You know, you're over
like those people that have the Christmas lights all year round.
Yeah, I'm not into that. But, yeah. But the Halloween, I can do
but
that.
But you'll hang a dead body outside for the whole year.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
So for this episode, guys, I'll start it off and I will guide you listeners through the history of Halloween and its humble origins. And we're going to start it off that way. And then Aaron will destroy any sense of security you felt with me with his horrific events, either on Halloween or related to Halloween. So get ready. It's going to be fucking nuts.
It's going to be nuts. And yeah, I will point out, it is only JP and myself today, unfortunately. We have a big Halloween bash that we plan to celebrate with all of our friends tomorrow. So Katie is actually working on setting up some of the fucking decor and all the games and madness we have planned for tomorrow. But we thought we still wanted to bring you something, even though it's not like the full normal episode. We thought it'd be perfect, right? Just to do Halloween on its own thing since it's such a big part of us.
Absolutely.
And if you're into Halloween slashers, again, I'm going to go ahead and just shamelessly plug my book, Scary Bastard. You can go to Amazon and just search Scary Bastard. It's there. It's, if you like slasher movies, if you like, you know, stuff that takes place during autumn and, you know, has all the ghoulish treats, check it out, you know. And if you have, it's available in paperback for $11.99, ebook for $1.99. And if you're a Kindle Unlimited user, you can read with that subscription. And there's 9 horrific Halloween-y illustrations in the book. So check it out.
Yeah, they're pretty gruesome.
But we won't bore you anymore with the plugs. I think it's time to get into the history of Halloween.
So Halloween originated from a 2,000-year-old ancient Celtic tradition. And those people, they had their calendars divided dividing their years between a light half and a dark half, which was interesting.
Like yin and yang kind of thing?
Yeah.
Almost?
So half the year was dedicated to life, growing crops, all that stuff. And then towards the winter time, that was the dark half of the year. But
well, that's the half, right? And it's funny. I feel like it still correlates to life today.
Yeah.
Like in the winter, that's the time usually like you see a lot of like suicides and people become depressed and, you know.
Yeah, and it's tied, a lot of it's tied to weather, right? Because you're going out less. You're more to yourself, I guess.
Yeah.
To your thoughts.
It's like a closest thing we as humans get to hibernation.
That's true.
Kind of, you know?
But we're awake the whole time.
Right?
Yeah.
We're not on that Walt Disney.
But, yeah, this during that time, they celebrate a festival called Samhain. And that's a pagan religious festival which started October 31st to November 1st. And they use that to welcome in the harvest and ushering the dark half of the year. And this makes sense, being that, like we said earlier, during the winter, things in nature tend to die. And the fact that a bad harvest, let's say they didn't reap a good harvest that year, they can die. 'Cause
right.
Back then, they didn't have no supermarkets.
No.
Yeah, they depended on the stuff. So if they didn't have a good harvest, some people are going to get murked.
And like you said, with the nature dying and stuff, I feel like dead leaves, you always think of that.
Yeah,
when you think of
animals.
When you think of Halloween, you know, you're like, oh, at least in New England. I mean, it's probably different.
Yeah,
in other places. Going. Must be weird. And like, what is it? The original Halloween movie was, I believe it was filmed in like California or something. And they didn't have, if you notice, like the trees.
Don't they have palm trees over there?
Like, I think the area they were in, it had like, you know, oakish looking kind of trees, but, but the time that they filmed, like it wasn't if you notice, the leaves aren't dead, but they've used bags of like fake leaves and you'll see those in the streets. So until it was pointed out when I was listening to the director's commentary of the film with John Carpenter, I never really knew that, but I always thought that that was kind of cool. So next time you guys, we usually all watch the first Halloween around this time of year. See if you feel any differently about it. I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting.
That is interesting, yeah. I wonder if they imported it from New England.
Yeah, I don't know if they might have made them. Sometimes they make that kind of stuff, too.
Artificial leaves?
Like, you ever see when they make fake snow in movies? That always looks mad.
Yeah.
Mad boot.
With the fan blowing shit.
It's fucking bullshit.
I wonder what they use for the fake snow. Well, anyways. Yeah, so if they don't have a good harvest, they don't eat. They die. So that helped contribute to the overall idea that that was the bad part of the year, you know, the evil side. So Samhain was the precursor to our modern-day Halloween. The Celtics believe that during the transition from light to dark, time and space became permeable and flexible to the point where spirits from the past or even entities from other realities can cross over into our world and vice versa, we into their world.
Oh, see, no, I never knew that. Actually, I feel like a lot of the stuff you're going to get into, most people, myself included, don't really... Mm-hmm. We just think of Halloween in whatever sense we contacted through movies or whatever.
For the most part, yeah. The modern day version of it has been like programmed into our mind through, you know, the commercials and movies and stuff like that.
But that part that you said where we can cross over into their world, that I'd never...
Yeah.
That's a weird concept, huh?
It is. And it's kind of cool, though.
It is. I want to check that shit out.
Where do we go? So yeah, so they thought that during that time period, there was the line was at its weakest point. So that's when we can cross over. These entities could cross over. So the veil between life and death was at its thinnest. And throughout history, there were stories of people on Samhain night getting lost in this other world and dead walking among the living. So
creepy.
People would light a bonfire and wear costumes to ward off these ghosts and evil spirits. And I'm pretty sure you heard about, right?
This part I've heard about, yeah. It's like kind of confused spirits and,
yeah,
you know, so you're not targeted and stuff. It's like a fear tactic.
It's smart, yeah.
Yeah.
Scare them before they scare us kind of thing.
Yeah. Tracy Morgan would agree.
Oh yeah, he's on the Scare Tactics.
I love that show.
Shout out Tracy. Also, another interesting tidbit. The probable reason for bats being associated with the holiday is due to the fact that these festivals included the huge bonfires, and those bonfires in turn attracted loads of insects, right?
Oh, and they're big bug eaters, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the mosquitoes.
So it's not like they had any other source of lighting. There's no street lights or anything like that. So those were the only times when they would see these bats is during these festivals. So they were associating it with like spirits and shit like that, because these bats would come out of nowhere.
That's crazy. So what drew the bats?
The insects, the things flocking towards light.
Oh, okay, makes sense. So the people, the light wouldn't have been there if the people hadn't been there.
Exactly.
And it's like a chain reaction. Then the bats are there. The people associate them. That's pretty cool. I always thought bats are really cool
creatures. And I originally thought, well, maybe bats are associated, or they're getting a bad rep because of, you know, vampire shit in Hollywood. And
that's what anyone would think that.
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting that it was actually because of the bonfires they had for these festivals.
I like this explanation better.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
So now you may think to yourself, how does this tradition last the test of time? You know, because that was a long time ago. And a lot of things get, you know, lost in time. But surprisingly, it was due to the Christians. I know everyone knows a Christian or two. But they adopted and modified many pagan holidays as a means to convert people over to Christianity. So they're like, oh, festivals were a major part of these people's cultures and like their way of life. So the best way to convert is to have something that's familiar, right?
So they accepted the holiday.
And they modified it as well too.
Yeah, they did the, what is it? It's a different name too, right? It's like a spirit one or a angel one, right?
Yeah.
Angelic. What is it? It's fucking gay, if I remember correct.
I'll hit you with that right now, actually. So in the 8th century, Pope Gregory III, designated November 1st as a time to honor all saints, and soon Saints Day.
All Saints Day, right?
All Saints Day was created to honor all Christian martyrs.
So it was Pope Gregory III that actually...
Yeah, he brought it. He made it official.
Official toilet tissue.
And they began incorporating some of the traditions from Samhain. So the evening before All Saints Day was known as All Hallows Eve, which eventually over time they shortened it. I think they put it a Hallows Eve evening. No, it was Hallows Evening first, then they shortened it to All Hallows Eve, and eventually Halloween, as we know.
Huh. So it's like an evolution of the lingo. I like the All Hallows Eve too. I think that one's dope. Have you seen that movie?
No.
So that's the first movie that Art the Clown from the movie Terrifier. Like, he appears in that one for the first time, like that character of him.
Oh, yeah?
So that's a really good one if anyone's looking for a fun Halloween movie.
He just does a cameo?
Well, it's like that one is like broken up into multiple stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people were most disturbed by the Art the Clown one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the director, I think it's Damien Leone, from there, he's like, okay, I'm going to do a full-on whole film of just Terrifier, Art the Clown. And now he's going to do another one because of the success of...
You know the Terrifier?
I think it's Terrifier 2 is going to be coming out. Which, for my money, if you're talking about good Halloween movies, that's a great movie, relatively recently made.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great Halloween movie, you know? You don't get too many of them.
Yeah. It was a brutal film.
It was.
Just
it was
realistic fun, with the kills, too. It was very sloppy.
Yeah,
these killers tend to be very precise, and I'm like,
Less CGI, you know? And yeah, like you said, very chaotic and a certain realism to the violence. That's just how I like my violence, you know?
Yeah, chaotic. But, yeah, so it was called, eventually they called it Halloween. But the church didn't stop there. Now, as far as the trick-or-treating tradition was concerned, that aspect of the holiday didn't show up until the Middle Ages on All Souls Day, which I think you were referring to. And this falls on November 2nd. And unlike All Saints Day, it was used to honor everyday Christians who have departed to the afterlife.
They keep tweaking it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad that, like, now it's Halloween forever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're not in the, at least, you know, maybe it's different in religions, but I think as a whole, everyone recognizes that it's Halloween, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a cool name.
I think
Halloween.
It became, yeah, like All Saints Day took a lot of the traditions from Samhain, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of spilled into Hallows Eve, and that became its own thing. Because All Saints Day still exists as a separate thing. And Halloween is what it is now because of its influence. But on that day, though, priests will instruct Christians to offer prayer to souls trapped between heaven and hell, which is purgatory, right?
Yeah.
And they believe that...
It's like a DMV waiting room.
It is.
For souls.
But it never ends.
Yeah. That's like the DMV.
So it's not necessarily hell, but it's not fucking... It's not a great place to be at, too.
Well, because you have guys that are getting ready to go to hell that are hanging out there, too.
Yeah. So you're like... Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I wish I could
it's look kind of into a fucked up thing. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like, oh man,
it's like a cell with 50% innocent people and 50% evil, guilty people.
But yeah, why are the innocent? I don't know. I have to look into that at some point.
Maybe they ain't got enough angels up front to do, you know, like figure out their grades.
Too many angels called out that day.
Yeah. Fucking lazy ass angels, yo. Dude. I thought they was perfect and shit coming from heaven and whatnot. But there's a line. There's even lines in heaven.
Yo. Get your shit together. But they believed the reason they wanted the Christians to offer prayers for these souls is because they believed that with enough prayer, a soul could possibly gain the opportunity to fly out of purgatory. And on to heaven. So, with that being said, a lot of poor children, beggars, that are children, and this is where it came, like, you see the skeleton of the whole trick-or-treat tradition, almost, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, this one's interesting. These poor kids would go door-to-door, souling. That's what they called it back then, souling, where they would provide their services in prayer to the families of deceased Christians in exchange for soul cakes, which were spice cakes filled with raisins. Sounds fucking gross.
So gross. Probably all old and shit, too.
It sounds so gross.
Yo, honey, you got to make the soul cakes. These fucking kids are coming.
But, it was like it was a bargaining thing. So you offer your prayers. We need more more people praying for our you know, are deceased people.
Why
we'll give them cakes and shit.
I don't understand why deceased needed to be prayed for. It's already kind of done, right?
They're not sure if they made it to heaven. Just
because they think they're in purgatory.
Yeah, just in case they're in purgatory and they need that extra push to get back into heaven. So the prayers, the more people they have praying for them, the more likely they'll be able to get out of there if they ended up there for some reason.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they need to get blue check certified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need enough Twitter followers.
They need enough likes.
This is just to so sense. Our listeners can understand. It might be complicated.
Yeah, modern day listeners.
We'll have to modernize it for them.
So, yeah, aside from those cakes sounding fucking horrifically gross, they probably didn't have much to eat, though. because they're fucking poor. But aside from kids, adult beggars will partake in the event in hopes of securing food and sustenance as well.
Oh, like bums, you mean?
Bunch of bums. Yeah. So they're like, get out of my way, kid. I want those soul cake.
I want that spice cake.
But when many of them often becoming rowdy and often shit-faced from alcohol consumption. So their initial pleas for food will become more destructive and demanding. Many of them using masks to hide their identities when they fuck shit up. Like they would sometimes get violent, like, give us some food.
So the mask stuff,
that's where that started it from
just homeless psychopaths. But the children, did they wear masks?
No, just the drunks.
Which is funny because then you would, when did it turn into like, why are you wearing a mask like that fucking drunk? What are you going to do something? You going to shit on this guy's doorstep if he doesn't give you food?
But at the same time, everyone's wearing costumes because the holiday itself.
Right. You're just saying specific masks though.
They didn't say what type of mask, but they said usually they wear masks.
They're more out to obstruct your vision of what they look like than
when they commit these crimes or, you know, acts of violence.
It's the equivalent of saying, you know, the guy that robs the gas station with the ski mask. Oh, he's out trick or treating. Right?
Like, yeah, that's a costume.
That's his costume, dude.
So that's kind of where that came from, the whole mask thing. So it wasn't so much a children's thing at that time. It was still very much adults. The children would just partake on the whole door-to-door thing at first. And that gets more refined later on. So the associations between witches in particular and Halloween was more circumstantial. So with that time period being one where more and more women were being accused of being witches and their supposed meddling with the evil spirits kind of aligned with what the whole holiday was, which was to ward off spirits. So they're trying to ward off spirits and these bitches are inviting these spirits. So they're like associated the two. Like, oh, you're possibly the reason why these spirits are coming to begin with.
Yeah. I mean, well, living in New England where we live, you know, Salem's not that far and a lot of witch executions happened, mm-hmm. you know, in relatively short distance from where we are podcasting right now. It all started actually with these two young girls that were trying, I guess they were trying to foresee their future. And if you put like a raw egg yolk in water and watch the form that it takes, like it's kind of going to tell you what occupation you might have in the future. It was like this old thing that kids used to do, I guess.
Yeah.
So, and I forget what they saw in there, but they saw something demonic in the yolk, and that's how it all started.
The whole witches?
That it's such a fucking stupid thing, but that's how it all started.
And so many women have died needlessly because of fucking egg yolk. It's fucked up.
Yo.
We covered an episode on witches, the history of witches, didn't we?
Did we?
I feel like we did, with the whole cheese... baby and cheese.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one witch story in particular.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was a great story. If you guys want to hear the story of the woman, a 300-year-old...
witch. I think that's the title.
She got like accused of being a witch and was executed in Italy or something, I think. And she was accused of throwing a baby into a vat of boiling cheese.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
So that's on episode 3 of season 1, Lords of Chaos, if you guys want to check that out.
Check it out, guys. But yeah, obviously, with that being said, it was a natural fit to throw them into the fray and spin their everyday kitchen items like a cauldron, which you see a lot in Halloween stuff, right?
Yep, all the time.
Or a broom, for some reason. Oh, everything the witches happen to have, even though... normal people at that time had
it's a just cauldron. Shit that women like women would cook and they would fucking sweep back then, you know what I mean?
Like everyone had that, yeah. But you know, these like, fucking witches, they're using it for evil. So
like taking a tampon, you know, and being like, oh, this is the witch. you know?
It's a blood sacrifice. So yeah, those everyday items were somehow given a more sinister spin and tone. So the cauldrons were like for spells and cooking up kids and shit like that.
Just like we heard about the baby and the cheese.
The cheese, yeah. Oh yeah, dude. It all comes together.
It was in a cauldron.
And the broom being a form of transportation. But
I've never seen that. And I'm not sure, like, you know, somebody made it up and they were like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, I could, you know, maybe the guy was just a good liar or something, but that shit's still going.
He must be proud. That's his legacy right there, just coming up that great lie.
That and the murder of a bunch of women.
Yeah. But actually, my mom, she told me a story where she, when she was younger and she was in, I think, Puerto Rico, she saw a flying witch on a broom.
No way.
One night. Dude. Yeah, she told me that. She was like, she was looking out the window and she saw in the distance this woman flying across the moon on a broom and shit.
Can you imagine though? Like, I mean, maybe your mom saw it. Maybe it was a crow. I don't know. Yeah. But either way, can you imagine actually seeing it though? Like, yeah, just seeing something that is supposed to be impossible. You know, and you're just.
I think I would come. I would sit down and think of every scientific possibility, but there isn't any for her.
Yeah, I feel like nowadays, like there's so much fucking.
It was a balloon.
Could be so many things, you know.
Yeah. Although that's pretty specific, though. It's a fucking a human figure.
Yeah.
On a broom.
Creepy ass face and shit.
Yo.
Warts too, right? Warts are always associated with witches.
Yeah. So let's get to another interesting origin story for a Halloween tradition. Now, this one is the origin story for the jack-o'-lantern, which we have in front of us actually right now.
Yes, before this podcast, we watched Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, and we each carved a jack-o'-lantern. And this was your first jack-o'-lantern?
My first ever.
That's pretty epic, dude, for your first. Great job. We're going to put up, though, the pictures of the jack-o'-lanterns we carved right before this podcast on the Instagram and Facebook and stuff. Go ahead and leave us a comment if you're so inclined. And we'd like to get your vote on which one you like better. Or if you think they both suck, you can also put that.
Yeah. So are you Team Aaron or Team JP?
Let us know in the comments.
Yeah. But yeah. That tradition comes from the European legend of a character named Jack-o'-lantern. So it was a dude that was the original Jack-o'-lantern.
Huh.
That was his name. And apparently he was such a bad dude and an asshole that when he died, he was actually kicked out of hell. Like Satan didn't want him there. But eventually the devil, pitying him, gave him a hellfire ember and Jack decided to put that inside a hollowed out turnip.
A turnip?
A fucking turnip.
You just
dude.
Wanted to say pumpkin though, right?
Like he put it in a fucking turnip.
What
he
a fucking idiot.
The pumpkin. Yep, it was a turnip. And it was not a pumpkin that was the original prototype. It was a fucking turnip. A hollowed up turnip. And I actually saw photos of it and it looked so stupid. The pumpkin actually came from American rendition of it. So the Americans decided, oh, let's fucking make this into a pumpkin. Let's use this big-ass pumpkin because it's probably useless. We were talking about how useless pumpkins are, aside from their seeds. And they decided to utilize the pumpkin as the new jack-o'-lantern. But originally it was a turnip.
You ever put your seed inside a pumpkin?
Many times.
You're like, I didn't carve many, but I fucked quite a few.
Yeah, I drilled a hole in one. Yeah.
Didn't we do an episode about that or something? Like, guy banging a pumpkin?
Yeah.
Katie did something about that.
Damn.
We covered it all, you know?
Yo, just full circle, dude. Circle of life. But also kids, they used to get those pumpkins and put them on, like, I guess almost like a scarecrow.
Kind of like thing. Stake them up kind of
thing? Yeah, stake them up, put like this white cloth over them. And walk around pranking people with them, like scaring them, like shit like that. So that came from American tradition.
Yeah, we're dicks, right?
Yeah. But
also the teepeeing.
The teepeeing is, yeah, that's fairly new though, I think.
That one's pretty new.
Yeah. I don't think they had teepee
egging?
Back there.
Is it, you know?
Egging, yeah.
It's like, oh, let me just pelt your house with shit that's extremely difficult to clean off and will stain it and then also smells horrific if you're too lazy to clean it quickly enough.
See, I don't think they did that back then because we're spoiled.
Right. They were like, we need these eggs to live.
Yeah. Like, we're just fucking throwing our toilet paper and shit. Like, they would die for toilet paper back then. You know?
They're wiping their ass with pine cones. Did you ever...
That's that one ply.
You ever eggs anything?
I never egged anything.
Nuh-uh. You're lying.
Yeah.
You're lying.
I'm not.
Okay, we got to go to the
market. Dude, I've been sheltered.
We got to go to the market after this. We're going to get you to... we're going to get JP to egg something tonight, too. He carved his first jack-o'-lantern, and we'll light something on fire, too.
I never done that, either. I've been sheltered, dude. I've been locked in a basement my entire life growing up.
Oh. Okay.
That's Michael Myers.
Might be a story for another day, I guess.
But
we're sitting in this room, though. It's getting really dark, and it's just a glow of our jack-o'-lanterns. I just want you guys to know, for atmospheric reasons, it's very creepy in here right now.
It's creepy, yeah. We just have the light of the jack-o'-lanterns.
Yeah, when we started, it was kind of somewhat bright outside still. Now it's getting dimmer, and the orangey glow, it's my favorite. It's just the coolest looking
shit. It's calming.
You know?
I feel so calm. But, yeah, so that covers the jack-o'-lantern. Now on to the phrase, trick or treat.
Oh, this is a good one. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I was
surprised. It's mostly just treat. I want tricks.
Well, back then it was a lot of tricks.
Oh, right, because you ain't got shit to eat.
Yeah. So... all those tricks actually led to the treats. Now,
fucking spoiled fucks getting treats, and then they throw eggs. Waste.
So the phrase trick or treat was actually a newer invention, with it only being about 100 years old. So in comparison to the actual holiday itself, that's fairly new.
Yeah.
It's been around for thousands of years. So it came from the destructive pranks that youngsters would partake in, which led to many people offering kids candy apple and treats like that to avoid being targeted by these fuckers. So they'll bribe them with candy, like, yo, I gave you candy, don't fuck with me.
That's funny.
And it would actually work. So
you ever see the movie Hostel?
Yes.
Do you remember when the dirty kids in like Amsterdam?
They didn't kill this guy?
They murdered a guy. They beat him with rocks and shit and stoned him.
Yeah.
But remember, they're shaking people down for candy in the movie?
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that.
It's pretty much what they're talking about there, because the pranks would involve like breaking windows with rocks and shit.
Yeah.
Like lighting shit on fire back then. It was very destructive little kids.
Well, it's funny because I actually wrote a story recently that... is going to be in an upcoming book of mine called Rotten Eggs. And it's about these two kids that are from like Detroit, where like the inner city of Detroit. And back in like the 70s and 80s in Detroit, they called it Devil's Night. And that is where mayhem would happen and tons of fires would start. Violence was very common during Devil's Night. And in the story, it's like these two inner city kids that drift off and ride their bikes for miles into the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And they their goal is to try and like spread Devil's Night outside of the city, you know?
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, that's a story I wrote called Rotten Eggs. But
I like the title.
Yeah, it's very metaphorical because like in the beginning of the story, they're digging up eggs that they've let sit in the ground for like weeks and let them rot so that when they hit people with them, it gets disgusting already. And then it's like these two characters, they are rotten eggs. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
they're rotten.
That's who they are. So, but
nice.
But yeah, I'll let you guys know when that one gets ready to publish.
I can't wait to read that one. That sounds ill. So, yeah. So they would bribe these kids to avoid getting targeted. And that candy eventually destroyed that destructive spirit, which was what Halloween was before. So
it's called diabetes. you can't run around and be an asshole with no legs, right?
So yeah, they basically after that point, they many people saw a opportunity. They're like, oh, so we can sell these candies. We can make a booming business out of this.
Yeah,
you know. So that's when it started becoming more commercialized. You saw it more on like TV media. They were spinning off a lot of stuff in the newspaper with art. A lot of the art was like back then, which was cool stuff. Like there were a lot of anything that was scary was pretty much thrown in and associated with it, like skeletons. That's where it started coming from when it started getting more commercialized. They started adding skeletons, stuff that is typically scary stuff like devils, like their interpretation of what Satan looks like.
And if you think about it, right, like Halloween's the one day of the year where you fit in no matter what, you mm-hmm. know, like you can be whatever you want. You can be yourself. And even if that's a really fucked up thing, you know?
Yeah.
And that was what I played with that concept in the Scary Bastard book. Like, you know, the day that you don't have to pretend if you're a real evil person.
Yeah, you could walk around normal
and yeah.
among people that are faking it.
Right.
They won't know.
And it just, I think it's weird that that's the one day like a mask is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Almost any other day of the year, if you wear a mask, I feel like it really disturbs and bothers people.
Yeah.
Freaks them out, you know?
One, because we're creatures that like to label everything, like to identify everything. Don't like mystery.
Right. The mystery,
it's unsettling.
We went, me, Dayron, and Mike from Real Judgments went to fucking Salem a couple weeks ago, and we walked into a coffee shop in Providence, and we were all wearing masks, and you could tell, like, the kid behind the counter was, like, very disturbed by it. He probably thought we were going to rob the place or something, and then he came over, and he got mad at us, and he told us to take the masks off. Well, he didn't get mad. He was just like, oh, you know, you guys really can't do that in here. You got to take the masks off. And then I was kind of like busting his balls a little bit. I was like, what, you don't have any Halloween spirit? And then he's like, oh, I do when I leave here. I don't know. But yeah, you could tell like when we were walking into the place all wearing masks. I mean, this is probably like a week ago from today.
Yeah.
So it's pretty early.
That is early.
To be doing it. And it definitely freak some people out, you know?
Hmm.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool, though.
What if you were there to rob the place and you just, like, he approached you and you blew him away and shit?
Yo, I've been fantasizing about that for days now.
But, yeah, that's how it became a booming business and more commercialized.
A boo.
Boom.
Boo.
Boo. But, Halloween obviously remains a popular holiday in America today and all around the world. But it actually almost didn't make it across the Atlantic because the Puritans were disapproving of the holiday's pagan roots. So they didn't take part in the celebrations and it was kind of frowned upon. But once the Irish and Scottish immigrants began arriving in America in greater numbers, the holiday made his way back because they couldn't stop them all. There was too many.
Yo.
So the very first American colonial Halloween celebrations featured large public parties to celebrate the upcoming harvest and an opportunity for people to share their ghost stories, sing, and dance. And guys, that was a glance at the history of Halloween as we know it.
Wow. That was cool. I feel like I heard a bunch of stuff that I didn't know.
Yeah, I learned a bunch of stuff that I didn't even think about or considered.
Yeah.
That was cool. So what's your favorite memory like growing up in Halloween.
Yeah, you know, I have one weird memory of like sitting on the couch, and I think my mom crawled in the room, and she was like on the floor and like peeked out from around the couch and was wearing like this fucking weird clown mask.
Oh shit.
It was like a creepy one.
I hate clowns.
And it, you know, you weren't, I was sitting there watching TV, you're not expecting it. And then I'm like, oh. So that was a pretty creepy one. I also just remember, you know, even growing up a little bit after that, we went to Club Hell one time and I was dressed as like this deranged panda, like basically like a ski mask that was like a panda bear.
Yeah.
And like blood all, I had blood all over me. And we had made like our own fake blood and stuff. So that was pretty cool. I love all Halloween stuff, you know. Even I have some vague memories of going like trick or treating when I was younger too. Halloween parties. That's why we like to throw the annual party with our friends, you know. What about you?
I remember once I went like way early on when I was younger. This guy like gave us mad dough money. Yeah,
really.
And then I was like, after that point, it kind of shaped my what's it called? My expectations, because I thought, oh, you're supposed to get money when you go out and do that shit.
Oh, so and it like, was just like the one off. I know just people, that one off. People used to give change, but it's not, you got like cash, huh?
Yeah, like it was like $20 or some shit. Dude.
Really?
It was ill.
That's fucking crazy.
He must have been a drug dealer.
Fucking piece of shit.
Yeah. He was probably high on his own supply.
Right?
Here you go.
Just handing out money and dope.
But I remember being disappointed the following years. Like, oh. Yeah. One time I scared a pregnant lady. I felt really bad.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Because I intentionally hid and, like, jumped out. And it was too late. Like when I saw her belly and shit.
Did she fall
like,
oh. and shit?
No, she was like, and then she was like, like,
no way, dude. Yeah.
This was in high school. I was like one of those assholes we were talking about in the story. It's like you're just pranking people. That was my main thing. I didn't care about the candy. Like I would go with my friends and like the one time we dressed up as like a cat in a dog costume and started like beating the shit out of each other, like in the streets. It was this dirty ass mattress, like that was thrown out. And we were like wrestling on it in front of people.
I remember we went to the Columbia Market in CF, and we fucking like that guy was shameless that owned that market.
Yeah,
like he had no qualms about selling us eggs. He knew exactly what the fuck we were gonna do with them. You know what I mean? Like, but we just bought them, and and we fucking we egged the shit out of everywhere.
Now, is TPing, is that exclusive to Halloween?
I think
so. Although people...
I feel like it is.
Yeah.
Toilet papering, right? Like,
have you done that?
I never really did that one.
No.
I've spent a few Halloweens in graveyards, too, which is pretty fucking scary. Just like drinking in graveyards and shit. But, yeah, man. It's the best. I'm looking forward to partying with our friends tomorrow. But... I enjoyed your history of Halloween.
Thank you.
So, continuing really with the history, this whole piece is a history, but JP wanted to go and kind of discuss more of the, you know, the traditions and how things started. I'm going to flash forward more to like current times or at least within the last few decades and talk about some of the atrocities that occurred on Halloween. So let's get into, you know, the disturbing, violent history.
The and, juicy stuff.
Yeah, this is this will not be for the faint of heart. Prepare yourselves. Yo, okay.
It's even darker.
So it's fucking dark and it's really dark in here right now. We're I'm just scared. Going by the glow of the laptop and jack-o'-lanterns, more importantly. But let me ask you, Gene, Where do you like to hang? Where do you like to hang out on Halloween or where? Around Halloween? Is there any places that you like to go?
I'm really a homebody, but if I do like going out Halloween, there was a graveyard where I used to hang out with my friends, where my buddies who lived next to. I haven't gone there in a long time though. So
I like doing like corn mazes too, and that kind of stuff is fun. But the story we're going to talk about took place on October 27th, 2005. And it's about a different kind of hanging out, I guess. The apparent suicide of a woman found hanging from a tree went unreported for several hours because passerbys thought it was a Halloween decoration, authorities said. The Delaware State Police said the 42-year-old Frederica woman apparently climbed up a tree with a length of rope and hanged herself from a branch sometime after 9 p.m. The body was suspended about 15 feet above the ground and was easily visible from passing vehicles for several hours. According to the state police spokesman Jeff Oldham, the residents who lived nearby, people noticed the body at about 7:30 a.m. on Wednesday, but dismissed it as a Halloween prank. Authorities were called to the scene shortly before 11 a.m. on Wednesday. Quote, they thought it was a Halloween decoration. So this was a weird one. I was like, so a woman just happened to hang herself in a tree on Halloween. And then, you know, I feel like you see decor like that all the time. Yeah. Like those hanging things from trees. But this was a real person.
I wonder if she picked that day on purpose.
It seems like a strange day to die on, you know?
Well, to kill yourself on.
Yeah. I wonder what the significance was. Why that day? Maybe it's because it's like a day where people gather together. Maybe you don't have anybody to gather with. I don't know.
Maybe. Did they say who found her?
It was like passerbys, like some people that were passing by the road, I guess.
So most of them ignored them, and then eventually some curious folks were like, hey, that looks real.
Right.
Oh, shit.
So that was one event I was able to find. I was also able to find one that actually occurred. This one was specifically on Halloween Day. This is probably the oldest one of the ones that I picked. 1963, the Indiana State Fair held an event called Holidays on Ice Skating Exhibition. And it was for a crowd of like over hundreds of people. But the grand finale was not what anyone had expected. The organizers at the Indiana State Fairground Coliseum, they didn't know that there was like a propane gas tank leaking in this poorly ventilated room that was around like near the skating rink, I guess. And they had a final act that was called Mardi Gras that was supposed to be taking place on like the skating rink. And the propane tank caught fire, led to this horrific explosion that propelled all the onlookers from their chairs. So like they literally got blown out of their seats. The death toll was 74.
Jeez.
And 400 additional people were injured. So this was like a mass
explosion.
Death. Yeah. I'd never found, like from everything I was looking at, I didn't see any larger death toll than that for like a single Halloween.
That's some Final Destination shit, huh?
Yeah, this is a random one.
Oh shit. And that was on Halloween Day, right?
Yeah, this one took place specifically on Halloween. Let me ask you this question though. So those were kind of two that were, you know, not really anybody else that was causing the terror, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just circumstantial. But has anyone ever stolen your Halloween candy?
My mom. I show Jack my shit when I come home.
She just straight bully you?
Yeah. Like, I want that. I want this. I mean,
and then she fly off on her broomstick after that?
I guess that was her fee for like taking me around and shit.
Like nurturing you and shit.
Yeah. And that too. Yeah.
Right. Just like, yo, you got to pay your way, boy. Well, I only ask because this story takes place on the Chicago South Side in 2011. It's about 55-year-old Liddell Peoples. He blamed his girlfriend for stealing his bag of Halloween candy, and the argument ensued with his girlfriend, who was 49-year-old Maria Adams. She threw a plate at his head, which struck him above the eye and caused a gash. And then Peoples grabbed a knife and stabbed her multiple times until she passed away. Yo. So he stabbed her to death over an argument about Halloween candy.
He must have really liked, what was it, Hershey bars or some shit?
I guess so. It's like, it's fucking candy, dude. Like,
you go to the store and
people are dead because of candy, you know?
Was it the candy or was the fact that she threw a plate on his fucking face?
Yeah, I guess, right? Maybe that escalated it.
Maybe he had aspirations of being a model and she scarred him.
The boy's got a sweet tooth. That's for sure, though. But not a sweetheart.
No.
That's a lot. It's different. What about tainted candy? Did you ever get anything that was disgusting or... This is an often raised topic on Halloween. You know what I mean? Like, people always talk about, oh, candy apples and razor blades and all these nefarious people that are out to give people and poison children, right?
My mom was super paranoid about that because she thought they were injecting with needles.
That's
injecting
funny, too, because
poison in there.
I've thought about that, too, because it's like, oh, you could just inject into them very easily.
And, yeah, no one would know because it's, like, small.
And it's like, how could you trace it? It must be tough.
You can't?
Well, you can, kind of. Because that whole thing is really an urban legend. Like, it's like a myth. It never really truly happened in the way that we all fear, which is like at the hand of a stranger giving out candy. But it did happen once. So it's saying that, you know... The 1974 case in Deer Park, Texas, involved a father who laced his son's pixie sticks with cyanide with the intent to kill him so that he could collect on an insurance policy. The father, Ronald Clark O'Brien, had fallen deeply into debt, so he decided to claw his way out of the self-inflicted money hole by murdering his son. He purchased potassium cyanide, sprinkled it inside five pixie stick straws, crudely stapled them all shut, and then handed them to his son, daughter, and three other neighborhood kids. To avoid suspicion, his plot was to kill them all and blame a neighbor. After trick-or-treating, O'Brien's 11-year-old son, Timothy, apparently at his father's urging, swallowed the pixie sticks powder and complained that it tasted bitter. He soon began vomiting uncontrollably and was dead before reaching the hospital. O'Brien was found guilty of the murder and died via lethal injection. He subsequently earned the nickname the Candyman and the man who killed Halloween.
Yo, the Candyman, huh?
Yeah. Which is, I guess, that's really like before Clive Barker's story, because this is 74. But yeah, so all that stuff about kids getting tainted Halloween candy, I think for the most part, that stuff's not really, doesn't really exist. There's a documentary, the guy who made the Cropsey documentary also made another one called Killer Legends. And he goes into great detail about this. Like that's one of the things he picked to research, the legend of kids getting poisoned or, you know, sliced up on Halloween by razor blades. What are your feelings on this?
I'm thinking, are there people that horrible out there that would do it to a stranger just to get cheap thrills out of it? Possibly. Is it likely?
Right. I find it hard to believe that that's the only case, but I remember when watching that documentary that he did say that that was the only case he could find was the one of the father doing it to his own kids.
Which is horrific. That's horrible.
Right? And he's willing to kill the others just to fucking make
it seem...
That
guy's a piece of shit. I mean, I've heard stories about... I don't know if they're true or just another, like, kind of similar legend thing where they, like, put, like, blades on, like, slides in kids' playground and shit. So when they slide down, they get fucking shredded up.
Right, and then there's the other one, right, where it's like, oh, back when AIDS was first starting to get talked about, people were like, oh, they'll put a needle blade in a seat of a movie theater.
Yeah.
You know, or like, in a coin slot of a fucking payphone or candy machine, you know? So, like, yeah. When you try to go and grab it, you get poked and you get infected. I don't know. I think that was just all urban legend, too.
It could be, but then, like, it's possible. What if someone's really bitter about having AIDS? They're like, oh, I'm going to make you feel like I feel.
It is possible, but I'm just not sure that there's actually a documented case. We should definitely do an urban legends episode sometime.
I don't know why we haven't yet.
Like, we could just go through a bunch of them, you know? There's so many. They're fucking... I think Katie did a few already. She did like a Forbidden Five on it, but there's so much there with that shit. We got to go back to that at some point. Well, this next one is more like, it's like a religious Halloween horror story, I guess. It takes place in Broomfield Township, Michigan. 24-year-old Rebecca Gay suddenly vanished in the small town of Broomfield Township, Michigan. Pastor John D. White asked his followers at the Christ Community Fellowship Church to pray for the young woman's safe return. It was Halloween 2012 when police scoured Isabella County looking for any trace of Gay. Pastor White was engaged. I know, it's a great setup, right?
Yeah.
Let's go to Darren's house. Pastor White was engaged to Sally Gay, Rebecca's mother, and she was one of his followers at the church. The pastor also sometimes babysat Rebecca's 3-year-old son, Conway, so her vanishing seemed, on the surface, to be very troubling to John D. White. But the reality of the situation was much more disturbing than anyone could imagine. Pastor White's congregation had no idea that the person responsible for Rebecca Gay's disappearance was the man who had been preaching Sunday sermons to them for the past 3 years. A 55-year-old ex-convict with a dark, violent past and a dreadfully taboo obsession. As Halloween and the next day unfolded, the truth about what happened to the missing woman came to light, and Pastor White's flock of the people of Isabella County learned what a supposed man of God was capable of. John D. White once told the 14 members at the Christ Community Fellowship Church, quote, "We need to check closely the seeds we sprout in ourselves. Nothing can be hidden from God." Perhaps when Pastor White should have taken his own advice, he preached to his followers. White was a troubled man whose past crimes were ghastly, but as a result of a dysfunctional justice system, he was a free man in 2012. White served in the Navy and worked as a long-haul trucker in his younger days. His first known violent attack was against a woman and occurred in 1980 when he was 22 years old. White lived in Battle Creek, Michigan at the time when he was married. One day he invited 17-year-old neighbor Teresa Etherton to his basement to check out the stock car racetrack he'd set up. Without warning, White attacked a teenage girl, stabbing her 15 times and choking her. Etherton later told police that White said, "You're going to go now. I'm really sorry you had to go like this. But what the fuck? You're just a woman."
Yo.
So this is kind of telling
you... She survived that? 15 stabs?
That's pretty crazy, huh? And the strangulation.
So he left her for dead. He thought she was dead. And she escaped somehow.
It just says that Etherton survived the brutal assault and White was arrested. He was sent to prison, but he appealed and won on the grounds that his attorney did not raise an insanity defense. White was released from prison in 83 after only 2 years and was given 2 years probation and mandatory mental health treatment. That's a failure by the system, right?
Oh, yeah.
Teresa Etherton had no idea that White was out of prison, and a few years later she recognized his voice while standing in line and turned around to see White smiling at her.
No.
Despite her attempted murder, John D. White was a free man. Can you fucking imagine that?
Turning around and seeing the, that's like some movie shit right there.
And like you think he's in jail, you're like, am I crazy? Like they didn't even fucking alert her that he was out?
Yeah.
Like that's when you know the system's failing people with shit like that.
Yo.
This was a scary Halloween slasher, it sounds like, right?
Right, that's some fucking Freddy Krueger shit.
Right, dude? This is
like a nightmare for her.
And then jumping forward a little, in July 94, 26-year-old Vicky Sue Wall disappeared from Comstock Township, Michigan. John D. White was still married and now had two children and another baby on the way. White worked as a maintenance job at a textile company where he met Wall, and the two had an affair. Surveillance video from the grocery store parking lot showed Vicky Sue Wall getting into a black pickup truck with a bearded man at 3 a.m. It was the last time anybody ever saw her alive. White was picked up for police questioning and admitted to the affair with Wall, but claimed that he had dropped her off safely later on. Police didn't believe White's claims, but there was no body and no real evidence to charge him with. 6 weeks later, Wall's body was found dumped in a rural area 2 miles from the grocery store where the two were captured on video. Her body was so badly decomposed that police could not determine a cause of death. She was naked except for a shirt and a bra around her neck. Do you see these like these random things stacking up, right? Like a technicality gets him out. Mm-hmm. And then in this case, it's like, oh, the body was just too decomposed for them to get the right cause of death. Like,
yeah,
it's fucking crazy circumstances. White refused to talk with police or take a lie detector test. A luminol test of White's pickup truck showed evidence of blood in several areas, but the evidence was severely limited. Due to the lack of evidence, White agreed to plead no contest to involuntary manslaughter and received an 8 to 15 year prison sentence. A sheriff's deputy said of the case, quote, you'd like to see him go away for life, but you know, you get what you can get. The judge added, it appears from your previous violent acts against women and this unexplained violent action that you have a dangerous level of self-control. While behind bars, White admitted to a prison psychologist that he had violent fantasies about wanting to kill and have sex with women's dead bodies. He served more than 12 years in prison and was released in 2007, same year the Giants won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Once free, he then migrated north, found religion, and became a pastor of the Christ Community Fellowship Church in the town of Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
So he left his kids behind and his wife?
I think they probably left him behind, I would hope.
Well, I'm thinking like if he's this obsessive and psychotic, he would probably hunt them down.
But if he could have killed them whenever he wanted, you know? Mm-hmm. He probably just wants to kill girls and fuck their bodies, it sounds like.
Strangers, yeah.
And hopefully that, you know, the mother or the kids was just like, I got to get out of here before he infects the children with the type of madness.
I'm surprised she didn't hear about his previous incident with the strangulation and almost murdering that first lady.
It's pretty crazy, but think about it. This is, that was a while ago. So I feel like in an age without internet, you know, it's probably pretty easy to hide who you were back then, which is scary to think about.
True.
Now it's like, oh, before you go on a date, you Google somebody.
It's a Google search away.
And you see their record right there. But
wow.
So a few years later, White was living in a trailer park 11 miles west of Mount Pleasant and was engaged to Sally Gay. In the weeks leading up to October 31st, 2012, he began having bizarre fantasies about sex with dead women. In the early hours of Halloween, after drinking several beers, White walked to the mobile home of Rebecca Gay, the daughter of his fiance, in the same trailer park he lived in and entered the dwelling. So they lived not that far away, and he just went over there. White attacked Gay, hitting her in the head repeatedly with a rubber mallet until she was unconscious. He then tightened a zip tie around her neck, strangling her until she was dead. Gay's three-year-old son, Conway, was in the next room of the trailer. White then dumped Gay's lifeless body in a ditch behind some pine trees about a mile from the mobile home. After disposing of her corpse, he returned to Gay's trailer and looked after her son. He then dressed Conway in a Halloween costume and dropped the oblivious boy off to his father in a grocery store parking lot. When Rebecca Gay did not show up for work the next day, her co-workers reported her missing. Police searched for the young woman, and White made his plea to the members of the church to pray for her. So this motherfucker's got some balls, huh?
Mm-hmm. He's got away with so much already.
Can you believe that?
He must feel
invincible. He dressed the kid up and then goes and drops, like, after killing his mom?
Yo. This should be a movie.
Right? The pastor was picked up by police and taken in for questioning. Investigators tried to appeal to White and told him that Gay's body would deteriorate and decompose in the cold, wet weather. A day later, John D. White, the killer and church leader, admitted to police that he had killed Rebecca Gay and had gave them the exact location of her corpse. White told authorities that the murder had been fueled by pornographic videos that involved necrophilia. What the fuck was he watching? He added that he didn't remember if he had sex with Gay's dead body, even though he removed all of her clothes. Armed with his admission, authorities were determined to put John D. White away for the rest of his life. In April 2013, the 55-year-old White, who was sentenced to 56 years in prison, 4 months later, on August 28, 2013, White was found hanging in his prison cell just after 4 a.m. Prison officials attempted to revive the convicted killer, but it was too late. White was dead at the age of 56, and he left behind a legacy of hatred and violence towards women. But, here's the kicker, when they took his body away in the ambulance, right, everyone was like, oh, he was officially pronounced dead. Then he came back to life, dude. He strangled the fucking ambulance people, killed them all, drove the vehicle off the road.
You're lying.
Got a hockey mask. No.
Yo.
That would have been ill, huh?
You almost had me.
It was White's son, Gabriel, who may have summed up his father's life the best when he said, he was completely crazy until the end.
Yo.
What do you think about that one?
That was pretty nuts, dude. That was quite the ride. How the fuck did he get away with so much? That's probably why he kept doing it.
Technicalities, right? I feel like that first one, he really did not get enough time for that first one, yeah. Right? He got 2 years for an attempted murder.
The system is as much his fault as he is because they let him free so he can keep killing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But we're not done with religion yet.
Yo.
Let's go back. We're going to go back in time on this one to October 11th, 1981. Sister Teda Benz, a Catholic nun, was brutally raped and murdered in St. Francis Covenant in Amarillo, Texas. Johnny Frank Garrett lived across the street and would later be convicted and sentenced to the death for killing the 76-year-old Benz. In the aftermath, two things would be disputed: whether Garrett actually committed the crime and whether his infamous last words were actually spoken. Mm-hmm. Benz's body was found in the morning by another nun. Benz was naked with blood all over her face. In the Covenant community room was a broken window. The sisters called the police, who collected the evidence that included a knife under the bed, Benz's bed linens, fingerprints lifted from the knife's blade, and the bed's headboard, and the cut window screen. An additional kitchen knife was found in the driveway outside. Meanwhile, an autopsy revealed stab wounds, contusions to the head, and abrasive injuries to the neck. The pathologist ruled that the cause of death was manual strangulation. Additionally, signs of external bleeding and internal trauma indicated forcible rape. On the night of the murder, a witness claimed to have seen Johnny Frank Garrett running from the direction of the Covenant. The kitchen knife found in the driveway also matched the design, make, and degree of a knife recovered from Garrett's home. John Frank Garrett was arrested November 9, 1981. At trial, the prosecution said that he raped and then strangled Benz to death. Garrett maintained his innocence but was found guilty and sentenced to death. He was then placed in death row in Texas's Ellis Unit Prison. Garrett was set to be executed January 6th of 92. However, he was given a reprieve by Governor Ann Richards at the request of Pope John Paul II. Ultimately, however, Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles voted 17-0 to uphold the death sentence instead of commuting it to life in prison. On February 11th of 92, at the age of 28, Johnny Frank Garrett was executed by lethal injection. His last meal was ice cream, but his last words remain in dispute. Garrett was quoted as saying, "I'd like to thank my family for loving me and caring of me. The rest of the world can kiss my ass." After Garrett's execution, speculation continued as his potential innocence and humanity of his execution in general. Mentally impaired and suffering from brain damage, a mental health expert described Garrett as, quote, "one of the most virulent histories of abuse and neglect I have ever encountered in my 28 years of practice." Garrett was allegedly raped regularly and beaten by his stepfather and forced to perform sexual acts for pornographic films. His family introduced him to drugs and alcohol when he was just 10 years old. He was also exposed to brain-damaging substances like paint thinner. The information was presented to the jury during his trial. What do you think about this so far?
Well, I want to hear more about the abuse that he sustained, I guess. But so he was mentally unstable.
Basically, the guy said, "This is the worst case I've ever seen of abuse on someone, and the worst like neglect of a human being, like a mentally ill human being."
And this is a therapist that worked exclusively with inmates and stuff.
Yeah, I believe that's what they made it sound like.
That's usually where you're. All right.
But they said, separate from the abuse issue, DNA evidence found in 2004 linked another criminal, a man named Leoncio Perez Ruda, to the murder of Benz. Ruda pleaded guilty to a crime that took place a few months prior to Benz's killing, the rape and murder of a woman named Narnie Box Bryson. Texas attorney Jesse Quackenbush was also intrigued by the case and made a documentary called The Last Word about Johnny Frank Garrett's case. He argued that the case was the result of overzealous prosecutors saying, "The old and newly discovered evidence of Johnny Frank Garrett's innocence is so compelling it would cause even the most bloodthirsty proponents of the death penalty to shake their heads in doubt." As for Garrett's last words, despite the widely reported and repeatedly quoted final remarks by Garrett, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice website states that he declined to make a final statement. So it sounds like, to me, it sounds like he didn't do it.
So he was wrongfully accused?
And the only fucking evidence it sounded like they brought up the whole time was the one person who was an eyewitness. And you know how shoddy eyewitness testimony is.
So this other guy that actually killed someone else, he was eventually linked to it? Because I thought they found fingerprints. So yeah, couldn't they identify who it was?
They didn't say that. I guess the fingerprints weren't a match
with the first suspect.
Because they never said anything about the fingerprints. you know?
Then how can you sentence someone to death without evidence?
That's what I'm saying.
So the only link, which...
This is the 80s,
you know? It still raises questions. All right, why... The only link would be the knife found in the outside, right? That
matched. And they said it looks like it. Like set, yeah. It seems like it's part of the set.
So was it a triangle? This is other killer knew this guy and try to frame him? I don't know.
It's a weird one, but it sounds like that's one of those weird Halloween murders that you'll never know the true answer to.
You said this was the 80s?
Yeah, it was
did like 80s. They don't have like DNA stuff? Like it was if before someone was that, raped. Yeah. Oh.
Unfortunately. But it's like, that's why I don't know if they, there's a documentary about it. So I don't know if anybody's interested. There is that documentary, which is, I forget what the name of it was, but. Oh, Last Word is called, about the Johnny Frank Garrett case. So he probably has more details.
Kiss my ass.
Right? Bury me face down so the world can kiss my ass, you know?
Yo.
So this next one's called Brutal Murder. On Halloween night, 1973, 9-year-old Lisa French of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, was dressed up as a hobo. One of my favorite costumes. I love the hobo costume.
That's a classic.
So simple to do, too, you know?
Yeah. Let's pull something out of my closet.
Some people do it, and they're not even trying, you know? So, yeah, she went trick-or-treating. After she rang the doorbell of neighbor Gerald Turner, he took her into his house and shut the door behind her. Turner would later write, "I can still see you standing in the doorway with what felt like a... I can still see you standing in the doorway with that felt hat beaming at having recognized me. Then I see the delight in your eyes turn to fear as I close the door behind you." What a fucking creep, huh?
Yo.
He killed and raped her, stuffed her body in a plastic bag and dumped it into a field. Although he was convicted of her murder, he was later paroled and would go on to file a discrimination complaint when Waste Management of Madison refused to hire him. How do you get out of prison after murdering a child? I just don't, like, in that fashion, I don't, it's not like, oh, your pool was not secured and a kid went and drowned in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe you were implicated in the death of the kid. You cut him into, like, you know, you sliced them up and put them in a bag. It's just...
Why is it like most of these murders always comes back to like sexual, like a sexual urge and shit? Is that like the source of most evil?
It's just sex and violence. You know, is one go hand in hand, it seems
one
like.
One and the same?
That's what it seems like.
Is that like why men get such a bad rap? Because, like, men are dogs, right? And they have this uncontrollable urge for sex and shit.
Yeah, I think it depends on the person. Because there's women that are the same way, you know?
Yeah, but how often you see a woman murder a dude because she wants to get laid?
Well, no. They have an uncontrollable urge for sex, some women, but the violence, that's different, you know?
That's exclusive
men? I wouldn't say it's exclusive, but it is uncommon to see those. So, like, okay, if you take a female serial killer like Eileen Wuornos, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was a prostitute that would bang, like, truck drivers and stuff and then kill them, you know? But it's not like... She wasn't killing them in a sexual manner. You know what I mean?
Was it a
She was killing them because of abuse kind of thing. And, you know, so it's like, it's very much the opposite with women, I feel like. You know, usually they're killing because of that abuse and shit like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some sick chicks, too, that there's just no explanation. But I think, like you said, like, it's not as common, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like every... male killer that you hear about,
the origin story is like sex.
The sex is intertwined.
Yeah, and sex is just our motivator to reproduce, right?
Yeah, even, it's not that anymore, though.
But it's just evil now. It's like a lot of it's just it gets corrupted.
Yeah. Easily. No, I mean, you can take it to extremes, you know, and even some of the stuff that's, you know, not killing people, it could get pretty extreme, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, when it gets to that level, though, get help. Just get help.
Maybe that's why historically there was so much emphasis on like sexual stuff when it comes to religions, like sexual restrictions.
Yeah, there's
so many.
Even going back to like the urban legend conversation, you know, like the lover's lane, mm-hmm. escape maniac, trying to deter you from sex. Don't go and fuck a girl in a car and give in to lust. The maniac in the woods mm-hmm. is going to kill you. You know, that kind of, it's just weird stuff like that.
Yeah. Maybe like most people see it as a form of oppression, but maybe there's a reason, ancient reason for it.
Who knows? I don't know. Well, this next one is pretty disturbing.
Like the other ones weren't.
This one's a little more, I think, though.
Yo.
Like many males who grow up to be killers, Richard Beinwald had a childhood stuffed to the gills with beatings and trauma. Very early on, he also displayed psychotic behavior of his own. At 5, he set fire to the family house. He was drinking at the age of 8. At 9, he received electroshock therapy. At 11, he attempted to set himself on fire. One of his estimated 5 murders occurred on Halloween night in 1981. 17-year-old Maria Salella of Brick, New Jersey, had been out trick-or-treating late that night. Shortly after midnight, a patrolman spotted her walking alone on Route 88 in the direction of her house. Around 10 minutes later, he had turned around back to offer her a ride, but she was already gone. Her corpse was later found chopped into 3 pieces and buried in the yard of Bergenwald's mother's house on Staten Island.
Yo.
So he abducted a trick-or-treater and chopped her into 3 pieces. Pretty fucked up. And this next one is a little more recent, 2010. On Halloween of 2010, Ohio teenager Devin Griffin returned home from Sunday church services and began playing video games before realizing that the house was unusually quiet. He then went upstairs to find the corpses of his brother Derek and mother Susan and Susan's husband, William Liskey. The killer had bludgeoned Derek with a claw hammer, shot William 5 times, and had a .22 caliber pistol, and raped Susan before shooting her 3 times. Devin was so traumatized, he could only say that it was, quote, something out of a haunted house. The killer was found to be William Liskey's son from a previous marriage. William Liskey Jr., who had a history of schizophrenia and violence. Liskey was picked up at a halfway house and pleaded guilty to all 3 murders. The murder came just a day after Liskey and William went hunting and had a few beers with friends. Quote, I loved my dad very much, and it makes me feel sick every time I think about what I did. Liskey, 25, said in court. I can't really explain why this all had to happen, but I think most of it had to do with my mental illness. Liskey committed suicide in prison in 2015. So imagine that. Coming home on Halloween, you're just playing video games like normal, and then you just notice a certain quietness in the house mm-hmm. that's just unnatural, you know? And you're like, wait a minute. Everyone's here. All the cards are here. That's got to be fucking scary, huh?
Well, yeah, walking into that scene, ugh.
It sounds like this guy just was tapped in that he just wasn't in control of his actions. Well, which is obviously not an excuse, but it's just what it is. That's mental illness.
Like, he never spoke about like what he was thinking at that moment. Did he black out? Was he hearing voices?
He said he didn't know why. He said it makes him sick every time he thinks about it. He loved his dad. He raped his stepmother, too, which is really fucking disturbing. So this one's a pretty weird case right here. This next one is Chris Jenkins, who was a 21-year-old student at the University of Minnesota, left a keg party with some friends and headed to the Lone Tree Bar and Grill in downtown Minneapolis to celebrate Halloween in 2002. The group arrived a little after 10:30 p.m. and parked just south of the bar. An hour and a half later, two off-duty police officers working security for the bar ejected Chris and instructed staff not to allow him back inside. Chris found himself on the street in 20-degree weather, wearing only an American Indian costume. He did not have his coat, wallet, cell phone, or keys to the car and his apartment. No one is sure exactly what happened to Chris after that. 4 months later, his body was discovered in the Mississippi River, still wearing his Halloween costume. Since Chris was intoxicated that night, his cause of death appeared to be drowning. Authorities initially believed the death was either an accident or a suicide. But his parents refused to believe this and pressed for more thorough investigation. Finally, in 2006, the death was reclassified as a homicide. Police claimed that an incarcerated suspect told them that he was present when Chris was murdered, then thrown off a bridge into the river. While the story is credible, there's never been any evidence to file charges. However, one possible theory is that Chris Jenkins could have been a victim of the mysterious and unsolved Smiley Face murders. These bizarre killings involved approximately 40 male college students in the United States who all died of drowning. In some of these cases, unexplained smiley face graffiti was found near the body of water where the victim turned up. While no smiley face graffiti was ever found in connection to Chris Jenkins' death, the scenario does have a number of similarities to these killings and remains unsolved. Now, they did say, it took like 4 months to find his body. Maybe the graffiti got wiped away.
Yeah.
Maybe it was in sand. Who knows, right? But I have a book on the smiley face killings. I haven't read it yet, but I wanted to do a story on that because it's super fucking weird.
It does sound interesting. Yeah. 40 victims?
40 male college. It's all drownings too, dude. And then they find these creepy smiley faces by their bodies. And none of them have been explained.
No sign of struggle?
Not in this one. It's hard with a drowning, I guess, you know.
And I feel like college males, like, these are probably people in their prime.
Yeah, or at least...
they'd be able to fight back.
At least able, yeah, definitely, like, capable, right?
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, we're not quite done with mental illness. I know I gave you a little break with the drowning, but this one's about the lunatic that didn't have to escape.
Yeah.
Mentally ill Derek Ward, 35, decapitated his 66-year-old mother, Patricia, on Tuesday night before dragging her body outside of the Farmingdale, New York, in what neighbors first thought was a Halloween prank. So this is, let me see, I want to get the date on this real quick. I didn't write it down, sorry. Yeah, so this was October 31st, 2014, just in case anybody wanted the date on this.
Somewhat recent.
It was claimed that Professor Ward was 2 days away from an appointment to get Derek medication. He had been without for 4 days, and that could have potentially saved her life. She had an appointment set up Friday. Her brother, the Reverend Robert Lubino, told the New York Daily News. She finally met a compassionate psychiatrist, but she'll never make it to see him. Describing Derek as a, quote, sick boy, Reverend Lebrano said Derek had battled psychiatric issues for over 10 years, but had never shown any signs of violence. He said, he killed my sister because we couldn't get the prescriptions he needed. For 4 days, he didn't have his meds. She's dead because he had mental illness, and we didn't know how serious it was. We're in terrible shock. She was a wonderful person. Derek had apparently sat with his mother's mutilated body for a few minutes inside their blood-splattered home following the brutal attack before taking it outside and kicking her head 20 feet down the road. Neighbors initially thought it was part of a Halloween prank and tried to pick up the body. Oh. As they were doing so, Derek jumped in front of an oncoming Long Island Railroad train. Reverend Lubino told the paper that Derek, who had attention deficit disorder and was dyslexic, was too old to be covered by his mother's insurance, and they struggled to find a doctor who would accept Medicaid. But he said they finally found one at the cost of $200 for a 20-minute visit, adding that his sister did everything she could to keep him alive. He said Derek's behavior had become increasingly erratic in the days leading up to the tragedy, describing how one evening she had dropped a fork while making him dinner, making him angry. He said the noise hurt his head. She was begging him to go to the emergency room, but he wouldn't. Professor Ward's other son, Robert, died of a heroin overdose in 97. She was divorced from their father, John. Professor Ward was a much-loved teacher of the language arts for 25 years at Farmingdale State College. The female's body lay in the street on Tuesday night as horrified residents looked on from their homes. A police officer, then there was like police officers like surveying it and shit. They also said the kid was carrying a pistol and 100 Valiums when he jumped in front of the train and died. Professor Ward was believed to have suffered multiple stab wounds and broken ribs before she died. She was an assistant professor of the language arts. We already said that. Let's see. Yeah, that's pretty crazy though, huh? Yeah. And he jumped in front of a fucking train afterwards, dude.
That's insane. Well, the part that got me was the neighbors picked up the body, thinking it was a prop.
Yeah, can you imagine?
And he kicked his own mother's head.
Like 20 feet down the street.
That's sick shit, dude. That's fucked up. That's another thing, too. Like, people can't afford their treatment.
Yeah.
Shit like that happens.
Oh, it happens all too much, dude. That's why I think it's like a fucking, it's the biggest problem that we have in America, you know, mental illness. Well, maybe not the biggest, but in my opinion, like
huge problem. Yeah.
It's massive.
People die over it.
All right. It was pretty fucked up. This is, damn. There was also one other one of this, like, Kentucky teen that tried to do a spooky prank and, like, pretend he was hanging when his sister came home, but accidentally hung himself.
Yo. Yeah. I heard stuff like that, yeah.
But we had done that one already about the woman hanging in the tree, which I found more disturbing. Mm-hmm. But what did you think? Which one of these stories disturbed you the most, do you think?
The guy that kept getting away with it.
That's scary, right?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know.
Because it's like mental illness.
By the grace of God, he kept like getting away with shit.
I mean, I'm sure he was mentally ill too, you know? But
of course, yeah.
But, yeah, just...
You have some uncontrollable urge like that.
The constant system failures. It's very fucking disturbing.
Yeah. Be it the legal system or the health, you know, the institution of health.
Yeah.
Failing.
Well, this is our Halloween special. We hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yo, I got the shivers.
Right? I like the history of Halloween, and then we led into some of these more
gruesome,
gruesome depravities that have occurred on the holiday. Also, I got three stories featured in the book Forest of Fear, Volume 1, available for pre-order on Amazon.com. One of the stories is called The Carousel. Another one is called The Old Hag. And then there's one called Devil's Night. So I think you guys, if you like microfiction, like short stories that have like creepy resonating qualities, go ahead and check that out. I think you'll like it. But yeah, this is the Halloween special. Anything you want to wrap up with? Or
Are we taking pictures of tomorrow?
Costumes? Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah.
We'll take some pictures of the costumes tomorrow and put them up on the Instagram. You know, check the Instagram for it and Facebook and all that, you know, whatever platform. I feel like it goes to all of them.
Yeah.
Check for our pumpkins too. You know, leave us some comments on and vote which one you like better. Mine, Aaron's, has the hand out of the mouth. So that's how you can kind of distinguish them.
Yeah. So are you team A or team B?
Wait, yeah.
Am I B?
J
A?
Or P?
Yeah. JP?
Team AB or team JP?
Yo. So let us know, guys. And I'm glad we had you guys listening.
Yeah. And next week, we're going to do one more evil extra. And we're going to give you guys some audio from a ghost tour, like a professional ghost tour through the streets of Providence. And they're going to go through and tell us all these different horrific details that happened locally around here. And if you're a local listener, we'll give you the details on where you can go and check out these similar tours with different stories. But I think
that's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. And then after that airs, we'll be back with our next episode 6. We're still determining the content for that. But we want to wish you all a very happy Halloween.
Yeah, whatever your name is, say, I'm mad. This is how you act when you are out of control. Well, for decades, all these crops and crazy people believed in miracles. But anyway, two stilettos and a suspected Zeta ritual. I don't want to ever see my mother have to go through this again. Never, Jeffrey. Jeffrey! You motherfucker! In recent years, it turns out the governments had been taking them seriously all along.
We receive.
Or anybody else was in there against their will.